You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
I saw the video, maybe you did too, some pictures, cash flying all over the highway. It was really a surreal scene. One guy said, I thought it was leaves. I mean, that's kind of what you think of, first of all, on the street, right? Not money, that's what it was. And I said, oh, look at that. Everybody's just pulling over. It's a miracle there wasn't an accident. Interstate highway in around Dunwoody, Georgia, near Atlanta. And so people are getting out, getting the money, which is okay if their intention is, well, I'm going to return it to the rightful owner. Obviously, this isn't my money, right? I mean, you don't really think that God is showering you with blessings in the form of bills coming down, really? You know, obviously something catastrophic happened with the truck towing the money. And then, but I was thinking thoughts. You know, I thought, look at all the people. Boy, I tell you, just trying to grab a few bucks, right? Like that. But then I see a photograph with the Dunwoody Police Department commending Randall Lewis for returning some of that money from the armored car. And I thought, wow, maybe he'll be an example. You know, people are going to get home with it and be like, and like he said, I was thinking right away at first, man, here's what I could do with that money. And then he thought, it's not my money. You know, that's going to haunt you forever. You keep that and you're going to wonder, you know, am I going to get in trouble for it? I know it's not mine. Is it marked? Maybe it was taken out of circulation. And it always keeps coming back. You know it wasn't mine. You know it wasn't. And God's going to convict you of that. He really will. I'm telling you right now. It's amazing. It was a lot of money, $175,000 worth, I think. And obviously the door came open on the back of the truck and kind of went like that. And the police, though, they were very understanding. They said, you know, it's certainly understand the temptation. Yes, it's like one of those things that's in front of you. Wow, and it just about takes all your power not to do it, you know. But it is amazing that there were no injuries on the thing. One lady actually said something that I was astounded by and really kind of is sad. But, you know, the police department was like, maybe people would do the right thing. And one lady said, I always thought the law, I could have sworn the law was finders keepers. No, that's not in the law. Just like you don't spell hamster with a P in it. It's just not there. But as much as you maybe think. But so far, five good Samaritans turned in some of the money. Obviously, that's not all of it, and not nearly, you know, as much as they probably should, but maybe over the days they will.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
It's a great way to start your day.
You'll wake up feeling fresher, happier, and ready to beat the world.
Beat the world. The Sound of Life.
So we had the people with the money recently that was flying all over the highway, and they were pulling to get it over, you know, pulling over to get it and stuff like that. Now, obviously, most of the people who got money didn't return it in, but maybe they will. And I know this because of a wonderful story that I was told. It's funny what sticks out in your mind. There's a handful of things that stuck out into my mind when I was with the kids on a school trip to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. That is one of the most sobering things you'll ever go see. And it's just incredible what was happening in our country. And that July, I mean, some of the things that are horrific that you remember that the guide is going to tell you about. But one of the most amazing stories was told actually happened some months after, I think maybe even after the whole Civil War was over, and it was years after that. A woman living in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, got a knock on the door. And there was a man there who was obviously from the South, by the way he talked. And he said, ma'am, when I was here during the Civil War, well, he probably wouldn't have said that, but he said, I stole your frying pan and I brought it back. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's really awesome. That's an awesome thing. He said, you know, that's all, probably all he ever said. He just couldn't handle it. Because it was stolen. There's just something about, you know, that you're not supposed to have that. You weren't supposed to have that. You took it, whatever it is. And that always, I thought, such a mundane item that it'd be funny if she never even missed it, which she probably did, however, because probably one of those nice cast iron frying pans, and that's probably why he took it. But I always thought that was a cool story, and I have an image in my mind of a man humbly returning a very simple item of cookware to a woman simply because it was the right thing to do. The right thing to do.
The Sound of Life.
Friday hat off. So, it's good to take off. It was kind of short notice. Went to visit my mother and father-in-law, or as they are more affectionately known, Nanny and Poppy, the patriarchs, the patriarch and the matriarch of your family, entire family. We nicknamed them Nanny and Poppy, but they love it. And they love to have company when they're on vacation at the lake. So that's where we went. And they also let us take their boat out. Which is, man, that thing's 35 years old, I think. It's holding up. But, again, we had engine problems. And like we did last year. Last year we were in the middle of the lake, and we couldn't get it started. I don't know why we shut it off. You're like, why did you shut it off? I don't know. But here we had gone out to a place, an island place, and had some fun and had lunch and all that stuff, and we were going to start it up and get out of there because mainly for some reason we got in a swarm of little green gnats, and it was really irritating. And it was kind of a spiritual lesson there, you know, because you can't move. There's no wind, and you can't move, and you're just being bugged by these little gnats there. So it was pretty amazing. We made some phone calls. Got some right advice, and boy, that's a pleasant sound, isn't it? It reminds me of when I was a kid, and we'd go to Myrtle Beach, and we'd be on that little road heading out to the beach. We always got a flat tire. I mean, you didn't travel around, either going or coming. You were going to get a flat tire. That's terrible, sitting on the side of the road. You're just there, teats building in, you know, there's no breeze. Man, when you get moving again, aren't you appreciative? You really appreciate something that you just took for granted. Kind of like being in Midtown Manhattan when the power goes out. When it's on again, you're like, yeah!
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
I can't stop drinking the coffee. I stopped drinking the coffee. I've stopped doing the standing and the walking and the words putting into sentence doing.
The Sound of Life.
Wow. Most runners linked to a complete marathon. It's always got to be a Guinness World Record, and I guess this one I can live with because it's not food. It's not, you know, like the largest pizza in the world or ham sandwich or something, but it's a group of runners have broken the Guinness World Record for most runners linked to a complete marathon. They make up the team CRW. They broke the record on Sunday while running to raise funds. Well, that's good for charity organization, Cancer Research. It's in the UK. They did it there. Guinness World Records uploaded some photos, of course, to Twitter, which came out on this day 13 years ago. It's hard to believe that. 122 runners were linked together through different types of rope. The marathon took place over a hilly course, was completed in 6 hours and 47 minutes. Wow. You know, you get the feeling when you see people, or I do, when you see people running a marathon, it's kind of like, you know, don't you want to tell them you don't have to do that?
Stop it!
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the Sound of Life.
You know, I'll be honest, I've never heard, and I did not know what a Red Rose Rescue was, but I love the idea of a Red Rose Rescue, and Father Fidelis and Father Dave and William and an unnamed individual, which I think is a woman from the photograph, are very big heroes in the state of New Jersey and our country. Saturday, they went to a place called the Garden State Gynecology in Morristown, and their aim is what they call a Red Rose Rescue. They actually go inside the clinic, and they talk to women in there. They give them a red rose, and they talk to them about alternatives in ways that they can care for their babies and people who will help them and talk to them and provide things for them. Okay. The rescuers, like any others who recognize an urgent situation, respond to dire circumstances of imminent peril in a spirit of intervention on behalf of innocent babies and beleaguered mothers. That's why they're there. That's why they stay there when people say leave, or I'm going to call the police and you're going to be arrested for trespassing, which is what happened to them. Most people go outside and pray for them, but there is a handful, as I said, who stay there. Really great. And they're there on behalf of those babies. And you know why? You know what the biblical reference is? Pretty cool. It's Proverbs 24:11. Put this on your t-shirt. Proverbs 24:11. Rescue those who are being led away to death. Man, that's pretty powerful. And God bless them. Nobody was hurt or anything like that. They peacefully were arrested and stuff, but, there till they had to be taken away by the authority. It's pretty cool, you know. It's the same reason that people during World War II, folks in Paris, there were people who illegally changed Jewish people's papers so they didn't appear to be Jewish, so the Nazis wouldn't know. There are people who smuggled babies in toolboxes and medicine bags and stuff. They smuggled them out of Poland and stuff. It's the same reason. They're rescuing people that would be led away to certain death. Proverbs 24:11. Loving that. Rescue those who are being led away to death. It was a very high priority for them. It's pretty cool.
Love your broadcast. Love your show. Love the station. God bless you guys, and thank you.
The Sound of Life.
You know, the moon landing, Apollo 11 anniversary, 50th anniversary. And, man, there was a lot of, I remember my dad talking about the whole space program happened so fast. Kids, you don't realize how fast. It didn't even take 10 years before we had nothing, and then we were on the moon. People walking on the moon. It was crazy. I mean, we couldn't do anything like that again. Probably not. But, it was in 1969 when it happened. President Kennedy had said in 1961, we will land a man on the moon and bring him home safely. You know, and we didn't even know how to get off the ground. Our rockets were going up and exploding. It was like, we can't put a man on that thing. So, in all honesty, today they were eating breakfast. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Collins, they're all sitting there just, you know, going through the routine. I mean, Neil Armstrong, the first man on the moon, was probably chosen for that because he just nonchalantly went through his job. I mean, he had cases where his aircraft got in trouble, including the lunar lander practicing it, and he had to eject out of it. I mean, he had like a nanosecond to figure out. He wasn't very high off the ground, and the thing went sideways and just took off and ejected. If he hadn't, he would have just probably not made it. And then he they go find him. Where is he? Oh, he's in his office going through papers. He's just sitting there like nothing happened, having a cup of coffee. And they were just stunned. And we're like, are you okay? Yeah, why? But things that happened to him like that in wartime as well, too. Incredible stories. Amazing. My dad used to say, you know, those astronauts are sitting basically on top of a bomb that's just controlled. That's what it is. He said they're the bravest people you can ever imagine to get up there and not know really what's going to happen. They've planned it out, but do they really know what's going to happen? The potential for disaster is just so great.
Hey, this is Danny Gokey, and you're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
A lot of stories were coming in as people were voting for places around the country that they knew of that were, shall we say, wonderful places to live because people cared about each other and stuff. And one of those, believe it or not, is called Hidden Springs, Idaho. I know it sounds like an episode of The Twilight Zone with the man on the train wanting to get off at Willoughby. It sounds like it. It really does. But it really happened. Joan Peterson and her husband opened up a place called the Dry Creek Mercantile, which is a cluster of stores and services that sits right in the heart of Hidden Springs. That's a planned community in Idaho. And it became a place where just everybody met. Kids would meet there after school. People had weddings there. People would meet and eat there. It was just one of those really nice, friendly places. And then her husband got ill. And she said, I was driving to the hospital maybe 3 days before my husband passed away, and I went past the business. And there's all these cars in the parking lot. I'm like, what's going on? 125 people came in and cleaned it, top to bottom, like it was new. I didn't ask for it. They just did it. That's pretty. She was thinking about, well, I'm not going to be able to do this. It was a lot with just her and her husband. It was just a lot, and people showed how much they appreciated it. That's the thing that's so cool, right? When people come in and they just say, hey, you know what? We're going to help you out. We like this. We like you. We like to keep it going. It's pretty cool story. Is that a real place?
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
Powerful story there about a young man out in the water. Been there, done that many times. You know, you got to really respect the ocean and the waves and stuff. He dove into a wave and didn't come up. And his father noticed he wasn't coming up, rushed into the water, pulled him out. He was lifeless. His mother said he was just like this blue rubber thing, 120-pound rubber thing. It wasn't even like he was a real person. What do you do? Well, fortunately, a relative who is a nurse was there with her family. And she immediately started performing CPR on Levi, that's the young man, but it wasn't working. She was doing an amazing job, but it just wasn't working. And then Derek Gibson also happened to be at the beach that day with his family. A former Duke Life Flight nurse saw what was going on and rushed over. Duke Life Flight provides critical care and emergency air and ground transportation. So, you know, they're time sensitive, and so he knew what that was like. Life-saving experience, try to save Levi, if it wasn't too late. And I think he was thinking that it might have been too late. He didn't believe he was going to survive. By the time he got to him, he had vomited up some water from the CPR, but he said at that point he didn't have breathing to the point that it would have sustained life for him. What do you do as a family? And they all were commenting later. They noticed he was pretty blue. So while the nurses are working on him, trying to perform CPR and revive him, you know what the family did? They started singing and praying. And they started singing and worshiping pretty loud. Kind of reminds me of the song that's out. And that's the reason they did this, sing a hallelujah. And that's basically what they did right there on the beach. And she said, the mother said, I just remember running to them, singing louder, babies, just worship him louder, sing louder. I ran back to Levi, and I hear Derek yell, there's a pulse. And that's what Levi's mom will hear that over everything else. He spent 2 days recovering in the hospital, made a quick recovery. He said, my brother and my sister and my cousins, they all started singing and praying. And they were like, Jesus, please let him be okay. And since then, he has recovered pretty quickly. The people that were in on the reviving of him or trying to, they just both said it's just nothing short of a miracle, absolute miracle. Talking to that little boy and knowing he's going to be okay, that'll stay with me forever. That Levi is making a recovery, a full recovery, is nothing short of a miracle in my book. I love that.
The Sound of Life.
It's had an incredible talk with Mr. Matt Maher right here at Cup of Joe Morning Show. And I found out something. His wife has written books or a book, man. Is that it?
Yeah, no. So this is our first one. So
okay.
My wife, Kristen, an incredible woman, you know, basically probably 3 years ago, started working with a therapist just to kind of process some things that she had gone through in childhood with family, just in her developmental years, you know, going bullying, you know, abuse, just a lot of different stuff. And really in the process, I think realized in some ways there was just like a lot of residual kind of unhealthy shame, toxic shame, you know, and you know, there's that kind of shame basically says, it isn't so much like I made a mistake, it's I am a mistake.
Wow.
It would floor you the amount of kids now that, you know, they say that more kids, it's more common now for a child to have anxiety or depression than it is a common cold.
Whoa!
Yeah, a lot of it is just the nature of the world in which we live. A lot of it, they're trying to figure out why. And, you know, some of it's probably a combination of media and technology and, you know, forcing kids to grow up faster, but they're not maturing any faster. So, you know, now you're just more, as a child, you're more aware of all this stuff, but you don't necessarily developmentally, like, your brain chemistry hasn't even caught up yet.
Good point.
she wrote this story about a young boy who gets a visit from the strange, kind of odd-looking creature called the Awfulizer. And basically, he just starts telling him constantly how bad he is. And the more he listens to that voice, the bigger that creature gets. And it's like he can't even interact with anyone. You know, eventually he ends up talking to his parent. And really, the book is about, it's about helping kids have a strategy from just learning how to talk to their parents about shame. And, you know, in the book, his parents basically open up to him and say, well, yeah, you know, the Awfulizer, he used to bother us when we were kids too. It's just a sweet little book, man, that packs a really powerful punch. And so it comes out August 20th, I believe. And I'm so beyond proud of her.
Matt, what is the name of her book?
It's called The Awfulizer.
The Awfulizer. It makes sense. I need to talk to her.
The Sound of Life.
So the biggest thing now, every time I look at Instagram, I open it up, I'm looking at an old person that looks familiar. It's because, you know why, right? Everybody's got a hold of this new app. FaceTime app or whatever it's called. It's what you will look like in the future, you know, older. And some people have done some really cute things with it. Toby Mac, I don't know. That's kind of interesting. I'm having a hard time telling which one. I know which one it is. But it's pretty amazing. I mean, when you look at it, when you think about it, it's really pretty amazing. And the funny thing is that for years, people have been looking at my photograph and going, oh, is that what you look like in the future? Oh, boy.
I say this calls for action, and now, right. Nip it in the bud.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
Who told you I was clever?
Oh, all your friends at the studio told me.
Oh, drat.
The Sound of Life.
Found out about an incredible groundbreaking new study done by Italian scientists. Now, here's the good news. It's a food, and it contains high concentrations of antioxidants, very high. And these compounds are important for reducing chemical reactions in the body that produce free radicals. With all that said, they are themselves believed to be a risk, raise the risk of cancer. So they have been linked to higher chances of cardiovascular disease and diabetes as well, too. So scientists found that the concentration of these antioxidants found in this particular item is way higher than orange juice or olive oil, two of the items most frequently recommended to limit free radicals. It's what you're trying to do. And I'm beating around the bush because they say that this could soon be recommended to protect against cancer. It's eating ants. Okay, you've got a plate of ants. Would you eat them if you could not get cancer? I'm sure most people would go, I'm getting them down somehow. How are you going to do this? Ants and other insects could soon be recommended to protect against cancer following this groundbreaking new study. Now, I'm sure that people have the wherewithal. Cause I mean, you know, I mix in this, whey powder or, you know, the protein powder and stuff. It's vanilla flavored. It's all, who knows what's in it. You know, I mix it all together. I make a great shake. It's good and all that. So, you know, I'm thinking if they can do that with the ants, then you got yourself a deal.
Oh, you're on the radio a lot.
Waking up with a cup of Joe.
Look, I'm a frequent coffee drinker. I'm part of the club. I have a card.
The Sound of Life.
Well, problems continue, mainly people problems at the border. That's what it is people coming over in record numbers. As they said 10 years ago, it was mostly male Mexicans sneaking over the border at various places, either to find work or run drugs. And, you know, that's kind of the way it was every once in a while. And now it's like 90% of the people now are from another country other than Mexico. And they're flooding in with children and stuff. And, I mean, the U.S. government's been saying, don't bring your children and stuff. You know, the whole asylum thing, what does that all mean? And there's all kinds of things. But the big thing is it's a people problem there. And it's very hot now, of course. And they have traveled hundreds and hundreds of miles. Who knows what condition they're in. And some people have openly challenged Christian leaders and people to to be there, and Franklin Graham is one of them. Well, he is there now. Samaritan's Purse, he's the head of that. They have stepped in to minister to migrant families on both sides of the border. They explain their work at the border in a recent press release and announced that they are working with churches and partners in a couple of different cities, Del Rio, Laredo, McAllen, which is probably one of the biggest entry points, other communities on the U.S. side of the border. They've been giving those who cleared U.S. Customs and Border Protection food, water, hygiene kits, diapers, other emergency supplies. They highlighted the help they have offered to a pastor in Laredo who opens up his home to more than 100 migrants each day. I guarantee you the church is doing stuff there that you don't know about. It's just not getting out. I know Abby Johnson a couple of days ago showed up with a tractor trailer load of supplies, and she was a little bit peeved, to say the least. You know, when you're working hard in that kind of heat, and you're looking over there at somebody who's doing a photo op in a coat and tie, you know, it's like, why don't you get to work instead of talking about them? That's kind of your attitude, and it's understandable, you know. But I saw what the Southern Baptist did after Hurricane Katrina. I was there a couple years after that. We were there working with a church group from Dutchess County, and, man, are they organized. They've got groups coming in there, so I know that faith-based organization churches, they have their own specialty, and I guarantee you they're there. You know, God's people are not going to let something like that. People who, no matter who they are, they're just standing around there that are in need of basic things, and they're not going to let that go unnoticed as best they can. So, Lord, bless their efforts, protect them, and fill them with your joy.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the Sound of Life.
Okay, we had an incident and a great opportunity for the church to show forgiveness. The director of Planned Parenthood was let go, fired, if you will. A couple of days ago, I guess, they had a secret meeting, and she, bless her heart, I have to say, standing up for everything that she knows is biologically correct. She is the first person, by the way, who was a medical doctor that has been the head of that organization. She was there for 8 months, and she was let go, I guess, for this reason. That's just what it was out there. I won't get into everything, but it was it makes biological sense, really, and she refused to go the political correct route thing there. But a lot of people all over her because she was head of this organization, of course. And people are calling for forgiveness, including Abby Johnson. I guess she's had some medical issues with the pregnancy, you know, and things. But I'll tell you something. Forgiving somebody like her should be like, that should be something that we can handle right up front. We got this. Easy, you know, like learning how to fix a flat tire on a car. We used to do that when we were kids. You had to do that. Your dad wouldn't let you drive the car if you didn't know how to fix a flat tire, check the oil or something. I mean, it was just one of those basic things. But I want to tell you a story about this woman who would start out by saying,
my story began in Holland. Mm. Being the baby of the family had many advantages, had older brother to look up to, two older sisters. My father was a very good watchmaker, maybe not so good in business. We never had much money, but in all other things, we knew great abundance.
That, of course, is Corrie Ten Boom, whose story did start in Holland, ended up being occupied by the Nazis, and they and her family ended up creating a room in their house that was kind of hidden in a very amazing way, and they would hide people that the Nazis were looking for, the Jewish people, whoever they could. Now, it pretty much was one of those cases where the longer this occupation went on, sooner or later, someone who you thought was a friend was going to tell on you because, well, they were promised something probably, and they did. And they all were sent to what we now know as a concentration camp. They were probably put on a train there, I guess, and things got really, really bad after that, really bad. You should know that Corrie Ten Boom, like she said, being the youngest of the family, somehow she survived that ordeal. Her sister did not. Her family did not. they say that the people who were alive there really wanted to do their, they wanted to end their lives. It was just so horrific. But they weren't in a position they could do that. It was actually worse than being killed, really. So I'm trying to set this whole thing up for you to know that as a Christian person, she made it through this. And she came out of it, and she got to be very well known because of the book that was written about her and her life and what it was like there. If you've ever questioned the horrificness of it, read Corrie Ten Boom's, anything by Corrie Ten Boom. There was an account where she had been going around giving messages and I guess preaching, I guess that would be a word for it, but going into churches and things. And, she was doing that, and she had just finished a lesson on forgiveness. And the people were leaving, the crowd was leaving, people thanking her and stuff. And a man in a suit walked up to her. She didn't recognize him. He stuck his hand out and he said, "You probably don't recognize me now, but I was an officer, Nazi officer at the concentration camp." And he said, "I've become a Christian and I would like your forgiveness." That's what he said. He stuck his hand out. Corrie Ten Boom, this wonderful, put on a pedestal, godly woman, admitted. She said to God right then and there, "No, I'm not going to do it. You can't make me do that. I am not going to forgive this man. It's too much. Can't ask me to do that." But she stood there knowing she just gave a message on it. So she said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll go through the motions of it. I'll put my hand out. I'll shake his hand. I'll act like I'm forgiving him." And she said, "When my hand touched his hand," she said, "God did something in me that was absolutely incredible. Came over me, and I forgave him. It was an incredible experience." So the lesson to you is, God is pretty serious about this forgiveness thing. And sometimes you just have to say, "I'm going to start going through the motions of it." And, I mean, hey, if it worked for Corrie Ten Boom, I'm sure it'll work for you. It's a pretty cool story in forgiveness.
The Sound of Life.
Oh, it's breaking news just in right now. When you hear that, you know, for me, it's probably tongue-in-cheek a little bit, but I guess actually it's absolutely true. Researchers, of course, have done all the studying and have estimated that the average person complains around once per minute. Wow. I'd hate to be doing that research between you and me. Oh, man. However, a recent Stanford study has shown that complaining for just 30 minutes, you know what it does to you? It shrinks areas of your brain. I'm not kidding. It shrinks areas of your
brain. Stop it!
Okay. Well, you stop it. Stop complaining. Participants who were instructed to complain for 30 minutes, the complaining room. Remember that? Okay. You go in there and you get complained. Yeah, I'll tell you what. It seems like that. It seems like some of the people that I've seen over the years when I've gone in to pay my gas, you know, and they're waiting for a sandwich or something. It's like, are you like just doing this because it's your job to complain? Just all the time. It's amazing sometimes. People hate me coming in. I mean, they do because I'm all smiling and I got joy, you know, and they're like, what's up with you? What's up, you know, and all that. It's true. Sometimes it's tough to take. But now I'm just kind of comforted to know that, you know, all that complaining really is doing its job on your brain. The good news, however, is that these neural pathways can be rewritten. Yes, they can.
Yeah, you were funny. You're funny, all right. You're a scream.
The Cup of Joe Morning Show with Joe Hunter.
You're as funny as a cry for help.
The Sound of Life.
Had an opportunity to talk to Matt from I and They right here on Cup of Joe Morning Show. Matt Hine is one of the lead singers from the band I Am They Band. You can check that all out. If you can figure out the part in the New Testament where they got the I Am They part, you can probably come close, but you're a biblical genius. You can figure that out. It's pretty cool and pretty spiritual. And, of course, their big song, Scars, is like way up, I don't know, number two on the charts or something like that, and being at Kingdom Bound, having songs on the radio, pretty heady stuff, Matt.
Yeah. Blowing up, yeah, it's so fun, though. It's pretty incredible. It's really never happened to us, so... but yeah, it's been awesome. Ministry has just been very full, and I think that that is the coolest part of it. It's just kind of like more and more people, you know, we played just a youth event last night, and it was like just to see the young people, like we played that song, you know, in particular, and once that song kind of comes around, just to see even young people kind of responding to it in a new way was really just special. It's awesome.
I've heard that from the stage when you're part of the group, and no matter who you are, when you see the audience respond, that's a pretty special thing.
Yeah, it's just crazy to see how God can take something, you know, that's personal to your life and your story and somehow use it, you know, in an impactful way in somebody else's world, you know.
We have to back up a little bit. You may remember the group I Am They from when they were with Casting Crowns. Was that really a breakthrough time when you were out with Casting Crowns?
I think, yeah, absolutely. The breakthrough came really like in us and just in our hearts, our world. It was kind of a crazy trajectory for us coming out of this album. Our second album, Trial and Triumph, came out, and right after it came out, our very first tour was with Casting Crowns, and it was like, we didn't even know that we were going to be able to release that second album, to be honest with you, and we weren't sure it was all going to come together. There was just so many kind of difficult things happening in our world at the time, and then all of a sudden, that kind of came together, the album came out, and it was like, to just be thrown into a tour with Casting Crowns was like, holy smokes, this is crazy. And to see all that God did, you know, was so crazy too. We were honestly kind of nervous going into that tour, obviously for multiple reasons, but just kind of sharing our stories in a new and vulnerable way, and we didn't know like how everybody was going to accept that, and
right.
We were on like the biggest tour we'd ever really been on, and it just kind of felt like we were stepping out on a limb. And the Lord, just that first night, I remember the tour so vividly. All of us were like crying on stage, like as we played.
Wow.
The set.
That's cool. That is very cool.
It was funny, but just really special. It was a really special time.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.